A letter that never reached Russia. My charming, dear, distant one, I presume you cannot have forgotten anything in the more than 8 years of our separation. If you managed to remember even the gray-haired, azure-liveried watchman who did not bother us in the least when we would meet, skipping school, on a frosty Petersburg morning in the Suvorov Museum, so dusty, so small, so similar to a glorified snuff-box, how ardently we kissed behind a waxen grenadier's back. And later, when we came out of that antique dust, how dazzled we were by the silvery blaze of the Tavrichesky Park, and how odd it was to hear the cheery, avid, deep-fetched grunts of soldiers lunging on command, slithering across the icy ground, plunging a bayonet into the straw-bellied German-helmeted dummy in the middle of a Petersburg street. Yes, I know that I had sworn in my previous letter to you not to mention the past, especially the trifles in our shared past, for we authors in exile are supposed to possess a lofty pudicity of expression. And yet, here I am, from the very first lines, disdaining that right to sublime imperfection, and defeating with epithets the recollection on which you touched with such lightness and grace. Not of the past, my love, do I wish to speak to you. It is night. At night one perceives with especial intensity the immobility of objects, the lamp, the furniture, the framed photographs on one's desk. Now and then the water gulps and gurgles in its hidden pipes as if sobs were rising to the throat of the house. At night I go out for a stroll. Reflections of street lamps trickle across the damp Berlin asphalt, whose surface resembles a film of black grease with puddles nestling in its wrinkles. Here and there a garnet red light glows over a fire alarm box. A glass column, full of liquid yellow light, stands at the streetcar stop, and for some reason I get such a blissful melancholy sensation when, late at night, its wheels screeching around the bend, a tram hurtles past, empty. Through its windows one can clearly see the rows of brightly lit brown seats between which a lone ticket collector with a black satchel at his side makes his way, reeling a bit and thus looking a little tight as he moves against the direction of the car's travel. As I wander along some silent dark street, I like to hear a man coming home. The man himself is not visible in the darkness, and you never know beforehand which front door will come alive to accept a key with grinding condescension, swing open, pause, retained by the counterweight, slam shut. The key will grind again from the inside, and in the depths beyond the glass pane of the door, a soft radiance will linger for one marvelous minute. A car rolls by on pillars of wet light. It is black, with a yellow stripe beneath the windows. It trumpets gruffly into the ear of the night, and its shadow passes under my feet. By now the street is totally deserted, except for an aged Great Dane whose claws wrap on the sidewalk as it reluctantly takes for a walk a listless, pretty, hatless girl with an opened umbrella. When she passes under the garnet bulb, on her left above the fire alarm, a single, taut, black segment of her umbrella reddens damply. And beyond the bend, above the sidewalk, how unexpectedly, the front of a cinema ripples in diamonds. Inside, on its rectangular, moon-pale screen, you can watch more or less skillfully trained mimes. The huge face of a girl with gray, shimmering eyes and black lips traversed vertically by glistening cracks approaches from the screen, keeps growing as it gazes into the dark hall, and a wonderful, long, shining tear runs down one cheek. And occasionally, a heavenly moment, there appears real life, unaware that it is being filmed, a chance crowd, bright waters, a noiselessly but visibly rustling tree. Farther on, at the corner of a square, a stout prostitute in black furs slowly walks to and fro, stopping occasionally in front of a harshly lighted shop window, where a rouged woman of wax shows off to night wanderers her streamy emerald gown and the shiny silk of her peach-colored stockings. I like to observe this placid, middle-aged whore as she is approached by an elderly man with a mustache who came on business that morning from Papenburg. First he passes her and takes two backward glances. She will conduct him unhurriedly to a room in a nearby building which in the daytime is quite undistinguishable from other equally ordinary buildings. A polite and impassive old porter keeps an all-night vigil in the unlighted front hall. At the top of a steep staircase, an equally impassive old woman will unlock, with sage unconcern, an unoccupied room, and receive payment for it. And do you know with what a marvelous clatter the brightly lit train, all its windows laughing, sweeps across the bridge above the street? Probably it goes no farther than the suburbs. But in that instant, the darkness beneath the black span of the bridge is filled with such mighty metallic music that I cannot help imagining the sunny lands toward which I shall depart as soon as I have procured those extra 100 marks for which I long so blandly, so light-heartedly. I am so light-hearted that sometimes I even enjoy watching people dancing in the local café. Many fellow exiles of mine denounce indignantly, and in this indignation there is a pinch of pleasure, fashionable abominations, including current dances. But fashion is a creature of man's mediocrity, a certain level of life, the vulgarity of equality, and to denounce it means admitting that mediocrity can create something, whether it be a form of government or a new kind of hairdo, worth making a fuss about. And, of course, these so-called modern dances of ours are actually anything but modern. The craze goes back to the days of the directoire, for then, as now, women's dresses were worn next to the skin, and the musicians were Negroes. Fashion breathes through the centuries. The dome-shaped crinoline of the middle 1800s was the full inhalation of fashion's breath, followed by exhalation, narrowing skirts, close dances. Our dances, after all, are very natural and pretty innocent, and sometimes, in London ballrooms, perfectly graceful in their monotony. We all remembered what Pushkin wrote about the waltz, monotonous and mad. It's all the same thing. As for the deterioration of morals, here's what I found in d'Agricourt's memoirs. I know of nothing more depraved than the minuet, which they see fit to dance in our cities. And I so enjoy watching in the Café Dansant here how pair after pair flick by, to quote Pushkin again. Amusingly made-up eyes sparkle with simple human merriment. Black trousered and light-stockinged legs touch, feet turn this way and that, and meanwhile, outside the door waits my faithful, my lonely night, with its moist reflections, hooting cars, and gusts of high-blowing wind. On that kind of night, at the Russian Orthodox Cemetery far outside the city, an old lady of 70 committed suicide on the grave of her recently deceased husband. I happened to go there the next morning, and the watchman, a badly crippled veteran of the Denikin campaign, moving on crutches that creaked with every swing of his body, showed me the white cross on which she hanged herself, and the yellow strands still adhering, where the rope, brand new one, he said gently, had chafed. Most mysterious and enchanting of all, though, were the crescent-shaped prints left by her heels, tiny as a child's, on the damp soil by the plinth. She trampled the ground a bit, poor thing. But apart from that, there's no mess at all, observed the watchman calmly. And glancing at those yellow strands and at those little depressions, I suddenly realized that one can distinguish a naive smile even in death. Possibly, dear, my main reason for writing this letter is to tell you of that easy, gentle end. Thus the Berlin night resolved itself. Listen. I am ideally happy. My happiness is a kind of challenge. As I wander along the streets and the squares and the paths by the canal, absently sensing the lips of dampness through my worn soles, I carry proudly my ineffable happiness. The centuries will roll by, and schoolboys will yawn over the history of our upheavals. Everything will pass, but my happiness, dear, my happiness will remain. In the moist reflection of a street lamp, in the cautious bend of stone steps that descend into the canal's black waters, in the smiles of a dancing couple, in everything with which God so generously surrounds human loneliness.